This is an iHeart podcast.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, final hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful, fantastic Monday. And so, let me tell you what you're in store for this hour. If this is your first time ever tuning into the Jesse Kelly Show, I'm sorry. So, every now and then, look, I love history. I'm a history nerd. I do it in my spare time. I read, I watch, whatever I can get my hands on, I'm a history nerd. And on occasion on this show, I will just completely blow up the show. No more political talk or anything else. And we are going to tell a history story of some kind. This one I left up to you. Everybody emailed in. This is the one you wanted. It was a couple months ago. And so I've been digging into it, reading and watching. And I spent like 8 hours yesterday kind of putting the finishing touches on some things, making sure I was where I needed to be to kind of lay out the story. And now we're about to lay out the story. I'm not promising you I'm going to finish this hour. If I don't, we will do it again tomorrow in this hour, okay? We've had them go 3 days before. I don't know that. I don't think this one will, but I don't know. I don't know till I start, okay? So we are about to tell the story of the kamikazes, the Japanese kamikazes from World War II. Now, before we get going, and I'm going to do all kinds of background on it and history stuff and things like that. Before we get going, let me ask you something. Really asking. What is suicide? Okay, Jewish producer Chris already jumped in and said, what do you mean? Okay, so if you take a plane, a fighter plane, and you intentionally fly it into a ship, I think you would agree that that is suicide, right? Okay, that's very fair. Let me ask you. You're in a fighting hole. You're a Marine on Iwo Jima. You're in a fighting hole with your buddy. And one of the Japanese troops throws a grenade inside of the fighting hole. You look at the grenade and you throw yourself on top of it. Is that suicide? Not quite as simple now, is it, Chris? Is that suicide? Okay, all right. Let's do one more. Just one more. Let's say your wife or husband, depending if you're a woman, your wife, your mom, your dad, your family, every person in your family who you love, they're all in a house that's right behind you. You're on the sidewalk. They're all in the house right behind you. Standing in front of you is a 7-foot muscle-bound man with an axe in each hand. And he is walking towards that house to kill, maim, rape, and torture everyone in the house. You are standing there unarmed. Are you going to attack him? Chris says yes. I would say yes as well. I think everyone would say yes. That's your family. Okay? You're going to die. There's a 7-foot guy with an axe, a couple of them. Is that suicide? All right. Now, just keep those questions in the back of your mind, and we'll do some background here, and then we'll discuss the actual kamikazes, what they did, why they did it. We're going to do this very honestly. As usual, some history when we do it may offend. If it does, just like the regular show, I don't care. If you're offended, you can email me all you want, but it's not going to bother me at all. Your offense is your choice. I don't care about that. We do honest history here from every side. We do honest history. So let's background this quite a bit. First, and this part is going to be very, very important for our purposes, we need to understand two things, two huge, huge things about Japan that will matter a lot. And I mean a lot. The first one of those things is I'm going to use the word celebration. That's probably not the right word, but everything I read on it sure looks like that. A celebration of death. A celebration of death. A different view of death than Westerners have, than I have, probably than you have. One of their emperors actually has a quote, maybe you've heard this quote before, that duty is as heavy as a mountain, but death is as light as a feather. Now, that may just sound like one statement. That was preached to the Japanese people, and most definitely the Japanese military. You know some of the first training you got in the Japanese military back then? I've read several different sources. Some said it was one of the first. Many said it was the first. Was not how to kill, not how to march, not how to run, not how to do push-ups, how to die. How do you die? What's the best way to die? Dying in service to your country, in service to your emperor, was not frowned upon. In fact, whatever the opposite is of frowned upon, that's what it was. It was lionized to the point of worship. The kamikaze pilots we're going to discuss, and kamikaze submarine guys, and kamikaze boats, and kamikaze torpedoes. There were all kinds of different kinds, and we'll get into that a little bit. But the kamikaze guys we're going to discuss here, their names weren't carried around back home of, hey, did you hear what, oh gosh, did you hear what Bob did? Flew his plane into a boat. Ugh, so sad. Why would he do that? No, Bob's name, there was a special shrine area set up. And not only would Bob's name be part of this special shrine area, people would show up and say, look at that guy. He gave his life for the emperor. He gave his life for Japan. Wow, I want to be like Bob. Understand there is a different relationship with death the way they view it there. And I said there were two things. Here's the second thing, and they kind of tie it together. You remember we went to Israel as a show? We did that big promotion thing. And I don't remember how many of us, 200 of us, something like that, 300 of us, the Jesse Kelly Show family, me, Jewish producer Chris, Corey wasn't with us then, but me, Chris, my parents, my wife, my sister, kids, and you and your kids, we all went over to Israel. Now, I'd never been to Israel, but it was and is a Holy Land tour. And I'm not one who gets sentimental about places that much. A little bit, but not much. But I will tell you, for me and my belief system, being on a boat on the Sea of Galilee was powerful. It was powerful. It meant something to me to this day. If you told me, hey, the Israeli government's they're making some moves and they're draining the Sea of Galilee, dude, that would hurt. Walking and say, hey, this is the place where we're reasonably sure Jesus carried the cross when he was bleeding and tortured. It hit me. That place hit me. Oh my gosh. I had to take a knee, say a prayer with my dad. Hit me. Now, there is something about having a religious connection to a certain spot of land. And the reason I brought up Israel is I've lived all over and I've liked a lot of places and liked this house or liked that condo, but never, there's not another spot on earth where I would feel like I have a religious connection to the ground. We're talking about Japan back in this time, and still to this day, but back in this time, they very much do. Japan, for the Japanese people at this time, and for most of their history, it's not just a string of islands where they ended up. It's so much more than that. It is their home. There is a spiritual connection to them. And this was obvious from all the writings, all the things I've read on it. A spiritual connection there that is, the best comparison I can make is the one I just did. Wow, that's where Jesus was carrying the cross. Like, that is the best connection I can make. This is the Sea of Galilee. The disciples are, that's the best connection I can make. An actual religious connection to the land that is beyond physical. It gets to a spiritual realm. All right. Now that we got those two things out of the way, let's talk about the origins of kamikaze. Next.
Fighting for your freedom every day.
USA! USA!
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful Monday. If you just joined us, you just joined us at the beginning, after the beginning of a history story on the Japanese kamikaze, and this will probably undoubtedly last us the rest of this show, possibly into hour three as well tomorrow. So I just gave you a little bit of a background of the Japanese people, their religious connection to their homeland, and their... I'm not going to say an affinity for dying, because that is not true at all. And we'll find that as we get deeper into this. But dying for your country, your emperor, your whatever is honored extremely so over there. And we will go into some of the propaganda that they went into. But for now, that was kind of the Japanese people and their connection. We have to go over the long, long, long background hundreds of years ago, not because I think it is important to the kamikaze story, and actually not because this is where they got the term kamikaze from, but because the Japanese people, and most definitely the young men, the Japanese military men, they thought this event was hugely important. So here's the event. You know about Genghis Khan and the Mongols. Just always think the 1200s. That was when the Mongols were, they were wiping out everybody. Everybody, in my opinion, this is an opinion part, I think the Mongol army is unquestionably the greatest army of all time. I don't think there's a close second. And I say that because they just blew through the other great armies like they weren't anything. I realize there was some heavy fighting, but they just stormed through everybody. Oh, European knights? Oh, the Muslim Empire of the Middle East? That's hilarious. They just destroyed everybody. Now, Genghis Khan is dead by this time. But his grandson Kublai Khan, is not dead. He is still the Khan. He's the Mongol king, essentially. He is the Mongol king, and... by now, this is it's the 1270s. Don't worry about the dates. Remember, history's not about dates. By now, the whole world knows about the Mongols. It's not a mystery. The Mongols show up outside of your city, you in some trouble. Kublai Khan, he's in China at this time. So if you'd like to look at a map, which I love to do, you're welcome to. If not, don't worry about it. China and Japan are very close, according to the map. It's across the water, but they're very close. Japan was doing some trading with the last surviving Chinese dynasty that Kublai hadn't conquered yet, and plus Kublai was a Mongol. Kublai looked across the water at Japan and thought to himself, I want it. I think I should have that. Now, Japan at this time, Japan was a feudal society run by different lords in this place, and they're elites, really, were warriors, the samurai, as you already know. They were all about warfare. They believed wholeheartedly in warfare, in making your body strong, and training, and things like that. These were not some chumps. The Mongols had run into tough guys, and they'd run into chumps. These were not going to be chumps. Kublai Khan, he arranges a 40,000-person military force, 800 ships, and he crosses that ocean to take over Japan. The Mongols are not chumps either, obviously. The fighting is inhumanly fierce. This is an amphibious force. The Mongols actually gain a foothold, but people are dying in droves on every side. Japan is outnumbered here, right? The Mongols brought 40,000 troops. Japan's outnumbered. The Mongols, they get a foothold, like I said, and then they return to their ships at night. Mostly. There were some Mongols still on the land, but most of the force returned to their ships at night. Now, I spent 6 months in Japan when I was in the Marine Corps. We had several typhoons when I was there. And I remember like it was yesterday looking down at a big Connex box in the parking lot. And I watched this typhoon pick up that Connex box and throw it across the base like it was a soda can. A typhoon is a hurricane. Remember, it's a hurricane. Imagine you're on an old, we're talking the year, this is the 1200s, right? This is 200 years before Christopher Columbus sailed the ocean blue. That's the kind of ships we're dealing with. The Mongol army was sitting on ships in the ocean and a typhoon came and wiped them out. Now, let's just say you're in Japan. You're a Japanese person. This frightening Mongolian horde crosses the ocean, tries to take you out. They get wiped out by the weather. You already remember you have a religious connection to your land. They just got wiped out by the weather? Wait, we had a storm. Wait, last night? Really? The Mongols are gone? Do you think you would think God's looking out for me? Japan itself is looking out for me? And this is where the name, what the name kamikaze actually means is divine wind. And that's what they chose to name the saving of Japan. In Japan's mind, the Mongols were coming to rape and murder. And of course, because it's the Mongols, they were most definitely coming to rape and murder. This gigantic, unstoppable army showed up and the divine wind stepped in to save Japan. But wait, there's more. And we have to understand this part before we get to the World War II part. But first, I need you to understand that you need to switch from Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile. You do. You need to switch from those companies because they take our money and they use it against our country. Corporate America is now a battlefield, and we must choose to engage on that battlefield. We do that with our money. We have to put our money where our morals are. If you support Black Lives Matter and Planned Parenthood, then please keep Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile. Please, by all means, give them all the money you want. I think organizations like that are disgusting. That's why I switched to Pure Talk, because Pure Talk is the veteran-led company where I pay less. They hire Americans. Whenever I've had to deal with Pure Talk, it's an American who speaks English. I haven't sacrificed service. I have international roaming, like 30 countries or something like that. I didn't give up a thing. I saved money and put my money where my morals are, and you can switch during the break. We're talking 10 minutes on the phone. Dial #250 and say Jesse Kelly. #250, say Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
Missed out?
Catch up.
JesseKellyShow.com.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful, wonderful Monday. Remember, you can email the show, love, hate, death threats, whatever you would like, Jesse@JesseKellyShow.com. Currently telling the history of the Japanese kamikaze in WW2. Don't worry, if you just got here, we haven't even gotten to that yet. We talked about the Japanese affection for their homeland, a religious connection to their homeland, a willingness to die. Dying in service of that is honored. And we just talked about the Mongolian invasion. They showed up on the shore. They fight this huge battle. They get a foothold. Uh-oh, we're about to be conquered and murdered and raped and everything's going to end. And then a typhoon comes in and wipes out the army? Wow. If you are already primed to believe that there is a religious sacredness to your homeland, that your homeland provides protection to you and your family, and then a typhoon wipes out the invading Mongols, what do you think that does for that belief system? It pretty much confirms it to you. Now, wait, there's more. A lot of people have heard of the failed Mongolian invasion because a typhoon came in and wiped out the army. But what most people don't know, it happened twice. You see, after the Mongols got wiped out by a typhoon, again, I want you to put yourself in the mind of the Japanese. The Mongols got wiped out by a typhoon. Kublai Khan then decides, okay, the army got wiped out by a typhoon. That's some bad luck. Clearly, maybe I bit off more than I can chew here. Anyway, let's just make a deal instead. So Kublai Khan, the Mongol, he sends emissaries over to Japan. Instead of sending an army, he sends over some diplomats, essentially. He sends over Scott Bessent and Howard Lutnick. He just sends over some diplomats. Diplomats show up, hat in hand. Hey, all that fighting stuff. Let's let bygones be bygones, shall we? Let's make a deal. Only the Japanese cut their heads off. The Japanese were not the most forgiving people, especially when you just tried to conquer their homeland. Enemies tend to be enemies for life. Plus, they were a very, very, very closed off society by now. They really wanted to keep to themselves. I mean, you can say that's good or bad. They just wanted to do their own thing. You just tried to conquer them. The Japanese took the emissaries and they cut off their heads. That you did not do to a Mongolian emissary. You remember the stories of Genghis Khan melting down silver and pouring it down the throat of a governor? He did that because the governor killed his emissaries. You remember the story of Genghis Khan and his Mongols, some Russian princes killed his emissaries? He took over the town and built a wooden platform on top of those princes, and they had a victory dinner suffocating the princes underneath the platform, sitting there eating, drinking, and being merry while everyone was dying. You really, really, really didn't want to touch a hair on a Mongol emissary's head. So when Japan cuts off said head, you know Kublai Khan is not going to receive the news all that well. He gets the news, does not receive the news that well, and he promptly, remember I said it was 40,000 Mongolians before, promptly raises an army of 100,000 Mongolians, over twice the size of the fleet, and he goes a-sailing again. This is about six, seven years after the first one, the Mongolian army returns. The Japanese wake up, the fighting begins again, and I kid you not, another typhoon comes in and wipes the Mongolian army off the sea. Remember that Japanese person, the Japanese religious belief, the Japanese connection to their land? How strong do you think that connection is now when the divine wind, the kamikaze, just swept the Mongols off the sea twice in less than a decade? If you are a Japanese person, you think, we have like a force field around us here, a divine wind. Now, I brought up that story because the Japanese brought up that story, and still do to this day, I should note. But since that time, that was the 1200s, children were taught this. It had a religious reference there. It was a powerful story. The divine wind came and saved us, the Japanese people, saved our homeland, saved our island. When our island is under threat, the divine wind will show up and save us. Now, pause on that. It's important to understand that history. Let's talk about World War II. Kind of from a Japanese perspective, because that's going to be important for our purposes here. Pearl Harbor, you know about, obviously. Japan, prior to Pearl Harbor, before Hitler started invading Poland and things like that, Japan was expanding. They had already invaded Manchuria. They'd invaded China. Japan was fighting World War II before anyone else was fighting World War II. And Japan had a plan. That rhymed, Chris. Japan had a plan. The plan was, we are stuck on this island. We have now modernized. We have a modern military, a modern navy. We have a modern economy. We have modernized our society. We are no longer in danger of being conquered. We don't want to be colonized. But the problem is, it takes stuff to run a modern economy or a modern military. It just does. I have said many times before, I'll say it to you again now, one of the unbelievable blessings about America is not just the size of our landmass, not just that we have an ocean to our left and an ocean to our right, east and west. We have so much stuff here, so many resources here. Yes, we do want to do trade. There's no question about that. You want to trade with other countries, but we really don't have to. We could just seal off the border, keep all our goods in here, and be more than fine. We have so much stuff. Japan doesn't have any stuff. Nothing. It's not only an island country. They just don't have resources. They don't have steel. They don't have oil. They don't have stuff. And so the Japanese government, they decided, well, we better go get someone else's stuff. If we have a modern military now, if we have a modern economy now, and we're going to run out of stuff, we better go grab what we want. We better go conquer. And they began. They began to conquer China. Now, America, this goes beyond America. It's all the allies, but I'm just going to make it about America. America, they didn't want Japan and China. We had interests in China. We had things. And we started leaning on the Japanese. Hey, back off. Hey, back off. Hey, get out of China. Get out of China. Get out of China. Well, Japan has a completely different national interest at this time. They don't want to get out of China. In fact, they want more than just China. Their intention is to take their modern military, their very capable fighting force, very capable navy, and they want to conquer so much over there in East Asia. If you look at Japan, just make a gigantic ring, a big circle around it, including the Philippines. We'll come back to that. They want to make a big ring around it and conquer all of it so they, just like us here in America, have all the stuff they need. America throws such a fit about this. We cut off their oil. We're cutting off their steel. Japan makes the worst strategic decision in military history. I don't know that that can even honestly be argued. They're going to attack Pearl Harbor. We'll touch on that quickly when we get back. Before we do that, let's make sure we have our dogs for as long as possible. Don't we want that? Doesn't it hurt so bad to bury your dog? Honestly, when I bring this up every time, it freaking guts me because I remember all the dogs. You have to go to the vet and put them down. You have to kiss them goodbye. You have to bury them in the backyard. Our dogs are part of our family and our cats if you're a cat person. That's why Rough Greens is here. No, it can't make your dog live forever. But do you think giving your dog actual nutrition over the dead food you give him, you think that would help your dog live longer? Of course it would. Live nutrients, vitamins and minerals and omega oils and probiotics, sprinkle Rough Greens on your dog's food. It's the number one dog supplement in America for a reason. Or your cat's food. They have Meow Greens as well. Try it. You will see so many differences in your dog or your cat. You'll be mad you hadn't been giving it to him forever. Call them 214-ROUGH-DOG or go to roughgreens.com, promo code Jesse. We'll be back.
The Jesse Kelly Show. On air and online at jessekellyshow.com.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, final segment of the Jesse Kelly Show on a wild Wednesday, a blast of a Wednesday. I know what you're already saying. You probably already said it. There's no way he's going to finish this tonight as far as the history program goes. You're right. I'm not. I'm going to do it again tomorrow, okay? Start of hour three tomorrow, wherever we leave off tonight. I am going to continue on with the history of the Japanese kamikazes. The background is really, really, really important. Okay, so we have to go through all this stuff. Pearl Harbor happens. Japan is expanding. They seize control of all these places. Remember, draw that big ring around Japan. They seize control of Manchuria. They have the Philippines. They have Wake Island. They Guam. They just grab control of this big bunch of islands and mainland stuff all around Japan. And the idea behind Pearl Harbor, stupid and suicidal as it was not to defeat America. That's false history, whoever told you that. They were just trying to slow us down. The idea was slow down their navy, essentially take out their Pacific fleet, grab control of these areas, then dig in as fast as you can dig in, because you know the Americans are coming. They weren't stupid. They knew we were going to come. Dig in. When the Americans show up, you make them bleed for every island, every inch of ground. And this is where they really screwed up. Americans, in their mind, were so soft. Remember, it was very much a war of racial superiority for the Japanese. These soft Americans are too soft to withstand the amount of death. We can take the death. They can't take the death. Eventually, America will sue for peace. Even if we, quote, lose, we'll end up with more territory than we had before. Now, this is important because this is something that we have to understand about the kamikaze as we work our way to the kamikaze. We already talked about the honoring of death, dying for your country, death not being a bad thing, giving your life, you know, death is as light as a feather, that way of thinking. The Japanese society at that time had nurtured, really, really nurtured, they had poured this mentality into their citizens. And as a result, they had a country full of citizens who were willing to die for Japan, were willing to die for the emperor. And that in itself is a weapon. And the Japanese, certainly their leadership, saw it as a weapon. Hey, we have all these people who will die for us. We can use that. That gives us a leg up. And wouldn't you agree, militarily, it does. If you have an army full of people who are more than happy to die for you, and they have an army full of people who are dying to get back home by Christmas time to be with the wife and Muffy, well, I think you would agree that the army that's willing to die has some advantage in some way over the army that wants to go home. The Japanese government knew it had a benefit. It had something. It had a leg up that every other country on earth did not have. Its entire army, for the most part, was willing to die. Now, during Pearl Harbor, because a lot of people think the kamikazes began later on, and officially the program did, but the Japanese were throwing themselves into death on purpose from the very beginning. Pearl Harbor, one pilot, plane disabled, not sure, has a chance to set it down somewhere. Instead of setting it down somewhere, makes the conscious decision to aim for an airfield hangar and try to fly his plane into it on purpose to blow up and kill as many Americans as he could. Now, he got shot down before he could do it, but he was trying it. That is one of 10,000 incidents I could list of the Japanese throughout World War II throwing themselves, committing suicide, doing essentially a kamikaze attack with whatever they had, a plane, a train, an automobile, but seriously, a rifle, a grenade, a stick, throwing themselves into death on purpose. So it wasn't just that the Japanese government thought they had a people who would do this. They did. They had an army full of people who were more than willing to die. Pearl Harbor goes well for Japan. But America starts to claw its way back. 1941, obviously, the end of it was a bad year. 1942, certainly the first half of it, a bad year. Really, most of 1942 was a bad year, to be honest with you. By the way, quick pause on this. You like World War II history stuff? You enjoy this? You know that I brought up Hillsdale College a lot. They have more than 40 free online courses. You know they have a 7-lecture series on World War II? Do you think you might learn something from Hillsdale College? If you get anything from me, you're definitely going to get it from Hillsdale College at no cost. If you're nerding out on this, maybe while you wait until tomorrow, why don't you go learn from Hillsdale at no cost? When I wrap this show up tonight, go to hillsdale.edu/Jesse and go learn about World War II from the greatest university in the country. hillsdale.edu/Jesse. More than 40 free online courses, no cost. All right. Now, back to the war. Japan, Pearl Harbor, you got it. The war at first is going poorly. We got, yes, sucker punched, but they were also prepped and mentally ready, and they had their economy ready for war. We didn't. We were just sauntering along, minding our own business, being America. We didn't want to get involved in the European war. Remember, we didn't like Hitler as a country, but it wasn't our problem. America didn't have that kind of foreign policy back then. All we wanted was to be left alone. Okay, well, now Pearl Harbor happens and you realize you're not going to be left alone. It took us some time to get the equipment we needed, the training we needed to get up to speed. And at first we were struggling. But then Midway comes. You know about the Battle of Midway. You've heard about the Battle of Midway, but this is actually important for our story, for the kamikaze story. The Japanese only had so many aircraft carriers. We, of course, could print aircraft carriers like it was nothing. They only had so many. They only had so many planes. They only had so many experienced pilots. We slam into them at Midway, and we not only sink a bunch of their carriers, we kill a bunch of their excellent pilots. Midway, it did not break the Japanese sword, but it broke off the edge. They no longer were better than us in virtually every way. From that point forward, they started to lose. The monster that was the American Navy was swimming closer and closer to the home island again. And that's where we will pick up our story again tomorrow. All right? That's all.
This is an iHeart podcast.